I'm Chris Farrell, and this is On Watch. Welcome to On Watch, everybody, the Judicial Watch podcast, where we take a deep dive behind the headlines to cover stuff the mainstream media doesn't want you to know about, where we try to recover some lost history, try to describe the inexplicable, and cover news stories that really you need to know more. And that's why we're here to do it on Watch. Today, we've got a real treat for you. We've got somebody who knows the real deal when it comes to our southern border, the security crisis around that, the immigration crisis. We're going to be joined by Todd Bensman from the Center for Immigration Studies. Before Todd joins us, though, I want to encourage you, whether you're watching this on YouTube or Rumble, or whether you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, please be sure to subscribe, to leave us a rating, and also on via the Judicial Watch platform, communicate with us. So let us know what you're interested in, what you like, what you want to see covered. We really appreciate your commentary and your insights as well. So thank you for joining us on Watch. And I'm very pleased right now to introduce to you the Senior National Security Fellow for the Center for Immigration Studies. And that is our good friend, Todd Bensman. Welcome, Todd.
Hi, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Todd, you're also the author of a book called Overrun, and that's really what we're dealing with. The United States, we went from a crisis to, I don't know how to describe it anymore. How do you do a superlative of how bad, how horrific the situation is on our southern border? You've been there, you've spent tons of time, effort, blood, sweat, and tears on the border. Todd, give me just sort of an overview. What do you think our status is right now?
Well, I'm still trying to come up with a good superlative for that, too. I mean, I haven't yet. But I mean, I guess the best way to put it is that, you know, we've been at historic levels of mass migration for the nation for 3 years straight. But we now have a historic mass migration crisis within the mass migration crisis, just shot full of steroids, this thing, what's going on down there. And I guess probably we should say that this should not be a surprise, because for about a year leading up to this, the U.S. intelligence community has been predicting, and the Biden administration has accepted those predictions and had built that into their policy strategy cake, if you will, all the way up until the end of Title 42, that the intelligence community, the Biden administration, us, you, everybody was saying that there was going to be this incredible human wave come over that border after Title 42. This is that wave that was predicted. This is what they said would happen. The numbers are right in there. The intelligence community was saying, you know, anywhere from 12,000 to as high as 18,000 a day.
Right.
We're well in the 12,000 range, 14,000 range. We've had 14,000 days. And I think that the intelligence community is going to be right about the upper range very soon, too, 18,000 a day. This thing is going nowhere but 90 degrees up.
I try to explain it to people and say, look, you know, a conservative ballpark estimate is that since the Biden administration kicked the door open, about 7 million people have entered the country. And so what does that mean? That's Virginia, right? That is the population of the state of Virginia. That is the revised post-COVID population of the New York metropolitan area. We have imported an entire state or one metropolis worth of people. And I'm not sure what your estimate is. Maybe you say 10 or 12 million. I'm not sure. What's your guess on what the total is?
Well, you know, over at the center, and for me, we come in a little bit lower than 7 million. We figure that there are probably about 4.8, pushing 5 million that have actually entered the country. And we take the conservative, I mean, it could very well be a lot more than that. I'm going to get just tell you that because of the runners, gotaways, the gotaway numbers,
right,
which are notoriously, hard to pin down. But I tend to like to go with the lower numbers, and we think that there are probably about 1.8 million that have gotten away undetected, you know, footprints in the sand.
Sure.
I think that it's a lot higher than that because there are fewer Border Patrol agents out there to count footprints in sand. They're all in the processing stations, not out there. And I don't think anybody's counting the way they should. But even at these lower counting for the gotaways, they're still really high, 50, 60, 70,000 a month coming through. But I'm telling you, I mean, I've done reporting on this. The deserts are just absolutely, riven with immigrants, traveling all these trails that all through New Mexico and Arizona and California getting through.
I don't think people really, I mean, that is what is not reported. People see imagery, no matter how you consume your news, people see imagery from border crossing the ports of entry or areas near there. And it's essentially people surrendering themselves saying, hey, me too, I want to get in. And they're processed.
Right.
There's so many others that get across in between.
Right. And I mean, there's another problem too, and that is that this administration created what they call, this is their terminology, lawful pathways, which is to say that they just created outside of the authority of Congress multiple other ways that immigrants can be legally, quote, I put that in big air quotes, big giant in bold, typeface, 32 pathways into the country where they're handing out entry permits at the border ports, right at the ports of entry. And they're also flying them in from foreign airports directly into U.S. airports by the hundreds of thousands.
And that right there, I don't think we should pause and kind of rewind and make sure that our viewers and listeners understand the Biden administration is allowing persons to enter the country. I mean, essentially, they're illegal aliens. I know that's an antiquated term, but that's what they are. But they're doing it in a quote-unquote lawful way, whatever that means. Not at the border, not running across the desert. They're announcing themselves and they're flying into the country. Give a little more resolution, a little more detail on that. How do they do that?
Well, the way that works, and I just published, I think the week before last, a piece based on our FOIA litigation. We have been over at the center have been battling the administration for these numbers. We are in litigation now, but we through that we have eked out a few nuggets of information about the flight program. They have shown us documents to say that since January, or actually October, about 1 year now, for just four nationalities, Cubans, Venezuelans, Nicaraguans, and Haitians, that they have flown 221,000 directly into 43 airports in the United States from not in Mexico, but beyond Mexico, like in South America and Central America. We are still litigating. They won't tell us which airports. They're claiming that there's a law enforcement exemption, which is just absurd. Our lawyers are handling this. But soon we hope to be able to show that thousands of these are being flown into JFK, that those immigrants are not all being bussed up by Greg Abbott. They're being flown in by Joe Biden. And also we believe that they are probably being flown in by the many, many tens of thousands into Miami International, DeSantis's state, but also, dozens of other airports. But I just want to point out that they only gave us four nationalities. There are also Colombians that they didn't give us that are on the approved nationality list for the flights, and Salvadorans, Hondurans, and Guatemalans for the flights as well, because they just don't want big congregations at the physical land border. It looks bad when Bill Malusian over at Fox News flies his drone over it.
Right.
So they came up with this to kind of like, nobody can see this. But in addition to the flights, they've also been bringing every possible nationality over the land bridges, over the ports. They're not telling us. They still are battling us on those numbers. We think there's somewhere in the order of, if there's 30,000 a month being flown in of just those nationalities, we think that there are probably 50 or 60 or 70,000 more a month being brought in over the land bridges, for probably a total of 100,000. I'm just spitballing here, but
sure.
I think it's kind of an educated guess. And if that's the case, the 280,000 that we know are crossing illegally between the ports, you should be able to tack 100,000 more on that from the CBP One apps, these, you know, the fly-ins and the border things. So we may be looking at a 400,000 a month month for just September, and wait till you see October. It is insane down there.
You know, I've marched along with the caravanners in Guatemala back in 2018, and people were hysterical then, but we decided rather than to sit, as you have very famously and very courageously done, you just don't sit in an office and talk about it. You go and do it, right? You're on the ground. So we had walked along in Guatemala marching with caravanners, and I've tried to explain to people that while the television shows crying women and children, there are crying women and children, but, you know, that's like a tiny percentage that overwhelmingly, you know, pick a number, 95%, 97%, are military-age males, right, 15 to 50, marching along back in the caravan days through Guatemala, but also at all these crossing points. And so you can't disrespect or you can't discount the women and children involved in this process, because it is horrendous and they are the most vulnerable. But there's an enormous amount of young, healthy, like I say, military age males just storming in with these crowds of people. So two things there. One, that's obviously a national security threat for a variety of reasons. But number two, you know, where's the feminists? Where are the women, the strong, intelligent, articulate women who would like to defend the women who are being exploited and trafficked across that border? Where is the feminist movement? Where is the vocal opposition to the abuse of women in this process?
Well, they're in the Democratic Party coalition, so they're just not going to say a word about any of this. You know, there's just, this thing falls squarely on our partisan divide. I mean, the way a lot of people, maybe half the country, would look at this is that if you have policies that are letting people in, you are going to invite the entire world in who, when they see that, also want to be let in. And when they see that and decide that they are going to be let in too, they're taking risks. So the policies are drawing people to put their lives at risk, and they are dying on the way. Lots of them. We just got the UN, I think it was, just named our border the most dangerous in the world. Is anybody surprised by that? Of course not. I mean, we have policies that are drawing people in. The other side would look at that and say, well, if you would just let everybody bring them in, fly them in, bring them in over the bridges, do all this kind of thing, then, you know, they won't have to be very risky. They can just let everybody in. And that's if you block anybody, they take risks when you block them, that kind of thing. So, but I would contend that none of that's true, because you can stay in your home country and apply for one of these CBP One family reunification visas in your home country. And if you wait long enough, you can get an airline ticket and fly right in. There are probably four or five different ways that anybody out there in the entire world can just get in without very many bars.
There's a unique situation in Liberty County, Texas, about 30 miles north of Houston. There's a place called Colony Ridge, and there's been some coverage of it. There's been some discussion. It depends on how closely you look at the border issue. But this really, I think, is sort of a unique phenomenon, because what we've created is an illegal immigration kind of ecosystem all together in one spot outside of a major U.S. city. And you may hear Eric Adams screaming in New York about his inability to cope with the illegal immigration. But Texas has its own unique kind of subculture ecosystem. Talk to us about Colony Ridge. What is it, and what's going on there?
That's a good way to put it, as an ecosystem. It is definitely its own ecosystem, like almost a hermetic kind of a ball around it, but a plastic bubble around it, rather. This is a community that covers about 60 square miles in Liberty County, Texas. A county that used to just be nothing but forest and a couple of little tiny towns inside that forest. And about 10 years ago, a developer figured out that there was a demand and no laws against him selling plots of land to illegal immigrants if he owner financed it to them at high interest rates. And he found there was a great market for it. And people came in from all over the United States and across, from across the border and everywhere else to get in on this land deal. And today there may be, we think, nobody really knows, maybe as much as 75,000 people living there. And when you go there and you talk to the police and the school superintendent and the, you know, firefighters and the people that live there, they'll tell you that, including the people who live there, that almost everybody there is an illegal immigrant, or maybe they have some kind of documents recently since they moved in. They were illegal, or now they were legal, but now they're illegal. They kind of shift in between legal and illegal and that sort of thing. And this thing grew up in the absence, I think, of very much federal law enforcement or even much local law enforcement. And so, instead of, you know, Otis turning himself into the jail, opening up the jail cell in Andy Griffith's Hayberry or something,
sure,
which is how it used to be over there, you have a lot of really heinous crime. You know, people getting shot to death all over, and drugs and kilos of coke and massacre of a Honduran family and a couple of maids chained to a bed and killed, and just not Otis anymore. And
yeah,
according to the local sheriffs, there are four cartels that have taken root there and are operating and doing sex trafficking and all kinds of heinous stuff, and there's no cops around. So that's kind of what that's about. Now, the owner, in fairness, the owner, the developer, the Harris family, they are disputing all of these facts, that it's a no-go zone. They're disputing that it's a majority illegal immigration. They have a lot of interest in doing that, because recently Greg Abbott announced that two things. One is that's our Republican governor here in Texas. One is that he is going to make this the subject of a special legislative session to come up with solutions. We don't know what that means at this point, but he said we are going to have a special session, because our legislature in Texas has every 2 years.
Right.
And it just ended. So, but the governor can call special sessions for unfinished business. The other thing that he did was he ordered a major Texas Department of Public Safety surge into the community that started today, where you have 60 or 70 different patrol cars now absolutely saturating the community starting today, and CID investigative agents intelligence resources. I mean, they're going to town over there. And I think that the land developer and maybe some of the people that live there or maybe potential buyers who are thinking about, well, maybe, you know, this is a great place to live. No law enforcement sweats us here. Might reconsider that purchase, that sort of thing. So they're fighting back on, and they're making factual claims that the other factual claims are incorrect. But I don't know. I mean, we'll see what happens with all that.
Yeah, it's something to watch, definitely. It's a crazy situation, a crazy story. And whether you, you know, whether you look at it through the immigration lens or not, the amount of violence and criminality in the community merits attention all by itself, regardless of whatever the person's legal status is to be in the country or not. It's when there's crimes of violence, when there's loss of life and property, they got to look at it, whether they want to or not.
Yeah, and, you know, the local police, I mean, they're the local police, but, you know, they may have like two or three regular street officers on patrol for 75,000 people on any one shift. And it's all they can do to just like, you know, stay up with, you know, broken taillights and, you know, calls for domestic violence and whatever, you know.
Right. I mean, and given the current situation in law enforcement, there's an awful lot of police officers that are going to stay in the cruiser, right? They're not going to get out of the vehicle unless there's some horrific crime of violence committed practically right in front of them, because everyone's got a cell phone. And you get out of the car and you start engaging with somebody locally, all of a sudden you've got a crowd of 15, 20 people around you screaming at you. And there's officers who are just going to say, you know what? It's not worth it. I'm you know, unless there's something really heinous going on, I'm not getting out of the car.
Well, at least on this score, I think that the circumstances have pivoted for the better. I'm optimistic. I know what the Texas Department of Public Safety surge operations look like. I've seen it down the border. They're going to catch stuff. I guarantee you they're going to catch a lot of stuff. And the things that they don't catch, they're going to flee, leave the area, and go underground for as long. And that's all good.
Yeah. Yep. Any sort of crime suppression is a good approach to take. You mentioned in the walk up to the show, you and I were chatting, you've got an article that's just come out. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
That's right. So the Daily Mail just published my dispatch from the Fronton, the village of Fronton, down on the south tip of Texas, where the Texas Department of Public Safety mounted a pretty unusual operation, which was to seize control by force of arms of a 170-acre island that had fallen under the complete control of two cartels on the other side, who have been just preying on the Texas side, farmers, ranchers, cops, I mean, anybody who, you know, would come anywhere near there or get in the way of their operations. And they've been doing a lot of drug trafficking through there into the interior of the country. It's kind of a free for all. They had immunity on this island. Fronton Island is the name of it, because up until very recently, neither the Mexicans nor the Americans really knew who the island belonged to. And you can't go onto an island and do law enforcement stuff without the other guy's permission and vice versa. So they both just have stayed away from it rather than risk some diplomatic row. And so the cartels have just been in there. But Texas decided that there was so much trouble lately with this island that they surveyed it, did all the land surveys. And it came out that the entire island was entirely north of the international boundary. So they went in on Monday morning. I went in with them. Full force, Texas Rangers, even some U.S. Soldiers that I'm not allowed to talk about went in there and
I think you just did.
I'm not going to give you any details. Those guys are not in the story, but what's interesting about this is it's most of the Texas operations down on the border deal with kind of a soft kind of target area, which is, you know, the immigrants that are coming across. They're just trying to
right.
block
Right.
the immigrants. But this is something entirely different because the entire other Mexican side is pure cartel land, and it's on a bluffs, on a rise, with sniper nests all along the thing. And even the names of the cartels spray painted on the front of these buildings. And they are not afraid to shoot at cops. They wounded a Texas Department of Public Safety officer.
That's outrageous.
Just a couple of years ago, they have machine gunned border patrol boats. They're killing and pillaging all through that area. And now the Department of Public Safety, Texas, is going to be like in a forward operating base, I guess, for lack of a better word. And, you know, fingers crossed for these guys.
That sounds like a fascinating story. And you say it's in Daily Mail?
It's in the Daily Mail today with video, lots and lots of pictures, lots of video of the invasion. I mean, it literally was an island invasion. We took it by force.
Well, I guarantee you we will link and post that with this podcast, so folks that are listening to us or watching us can click on that and check out the story. I'm sure it is fascinating. It sounds like quite an operation, an amphibious assault onto an American island and retaking it from cartel. That is wild stuff.
We haven't done that yet. That's a new one.
Yep, that is wild. Todd, talk to us about your book, Overrun. Where can people find it?
Sure. Overrun, How Joe Biden Unleashed the Greatest Border Crisis in U.S. History. That book is in bookstores, anywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever. And the book is really the only one out there that documents in a real painstaking reporter-based way how we got to this, into this situation with this border crisis. It's about this particular border crisis, the first 2 years of it. And obviously I had to stop, and I was very clear in the book that, hey, we're not even through this thing yet, but if we're ever gonna get through it, we have to understand how we got into it. If we're ever gonna get out of it, we have to figure out, you know, what was the pathway into it. And this book is really kind of a complete reference guide for what happened, how we got into this.
That's great. I commend the book to you. Todd, where can folks follow your work? You got social media handles or a website, or where can they find out more about what you're doing?
Right. I mean, you can follow my X account, Benzman Todd. I'm on Getter, Todd Benzman at Getter. I mean, just look me up there. And Truth Social. I've got an account on Truth Social. I post on all of those. And the best place to keep track of my work, because I publish widely, even though I work for the Center for Immigration Studies, is eventually I put all of it on my personal website, toddbenzman.com.
Todd Benzman, Senior National Security Fellow for the Center for Immigration Studies. We really appreciate you joining us and kind of bringing us up to speed on the mega ultra border crisis and how bad it's getting.
I gotta come up with something.
Thank you again, Todd. Really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Chris Farrell on Watch.